Hi, it's Roger Gerstmann, and I thought it'd be very interesting for First Republic advisors to hear from a prominent securities attorney who is very reputable in the industry. Name is Raghi Dunn. Today we're asking questions regarding a number of concerns that advisors have reached out to me about, and we hope to address many of those questions. One big issue is the employment contract that must be signed with a fill or kill mandate. Others are concerned about the non-solicitation clauses in the contract and how that might hurt them in the future. Others are concerned about the cause language in the contract. Thereafter, others are interested to know about the retention agreement and terms and conditions regarding those. So with that, I'd like to introduce Raghi Dunn and appreciate the opportunity for you to listen. I can be always reached at 415-265-4029. Thank you.
There were some questions that some people have. If I have a prom note and I don't sign this new agreement and or I leave or they fire me because I don't sign this new agreement, what happens to my prom note? And statistically, approximately, I've seen a number of studies showing that 92% of the time, the wirehouse investment banks win on a prom note. Of that percentage, about a quarter of the time, the amount is reduced. Then you have a situation where there's a closure of an office, which we saw in Barclays case, as well as Credit Suisse. And someone can argue, well, that's extenuating circumstances. I have intimate knowledge about the Credit Suisse private bank shutdown in the U.S., represented more than 25 financial advisors across the country. Of all the cases that have gone to trial on prom note, only one person has won. It was one of my clients here in Dallas. And I had a set of clients in Houston that bought their prom note and they lost and had to pay the prom note in full plus interest and attorney's fees. The client of mine in Dallas was the only one. He was able to defeat a $734,000 prom note. So it is possible. And what you argue about is you forced me to leave. I had to leave. And under these circumstances, when there's a shutdown involved, that is an extenuating circumstance. It's still long odds to defeat a prom note.
Understood. Now, there's language in here, Rock, that says that if you are terminated not for cause, there's an acceleration of your payments. So
your bonus, retention bonus payments.
Right. And what about the payments that were for people that were on contract on deal for the last 2 to 3, 4 years who are owed, you know, who have been given money. So does that mean if they're terminated, not for cause, it accelerates? And how would that possibly be done?
You'd have to look at each individual's contract to answer that question and the law of that state.
Okay.
I think these new contracts have what we call a merger integration clause, saying that these supersede the prior agreements. If that's contained, then chances are that the only payments that are due are what I would call the bonus acceleration payments if you're fired without cause or because of death or disability.
Understood. Now, is it your assumption that since JP Morgan purchased all the assets of this firm, First Republic, the advisors and the clients, that they essentially are saying that they own these clients with a 1-year non-solicitation clause. And if you leave, the firm has a right to slap a TRD, TRO. And what's your assumption of what JP Morgan's actually thinking here with First Republic?
Well, typically anybody is going to do one of these deals as an asset purchase only. They don't want to purchase the liabilities generally, but an asset purchase is an asset are all rights, obligations that others owe to the old co that new co is purchasing. and one asset is a non-compete and non-solicit. Obviously, if you purchase a company and everybody's entitled to quit the next day and start competing against you, and you have the longstanding concern over human capital drain or the flight of your human capital, then the entity that you purchase isn't worth much, especially in a service-oriented business like the financial industry. So sure, their proprietary products might be a drawing card, but the reality is it's the individual FAs who have the individualized longstanding relationships with the clients that drive value. And so that's why whenever NewCo purchases OldCo or merges with OldCo, they want to make darn sure that the non-competes and non-solicits remain in place. And I'm certain that's what they're thinking.
And that goes the same with advisors who brought over clients from Merrill Lynch or Morgan Stanley in previous years, or had clients for, you know, decades before, whether or not they're incubated at First Republic or from Merrill previously.
Again, that depends on the particular language in any individual FA's contracts. It depends on the law of a particular state. Some states will say, if I brought the clients with me before starting at OldCo, then when I leave, those clients are mine, regardless of what the contract says. Other courts may take the position, well, depending on how long you worked at OldCo, even though you brought the clients for 10 years, you were taking the clients to the company's suite or providing them with research and other information, and the goodwill that was developed over that period of time turned that client from being your client into the company's client. So the short answer is there's no guarantees on that issue. I think it's better, obviously, if you brought the clients to the firm rather than the firm gave them to you on a silver platter, for you to say, I should be able to solicit that client because I brought them to the table.
Do we believe, based on history, that we expect that JP Morgan will likely lay claim if they do leave the firm?
Well, yes. I mean, that's a $64,000 question. That's something we help FAs with, is leaving the right way, so you don't encourage, stir up the hornet's nest, if you will. And depending on how you depart, sometimes OldCo will leave you alone.
Understood. They're also threatening in the language that either you sign or resign. And so, and this is for the document tomorrow that needs to be apparently signed for everybody. What is the recommendation? I mean, assume it's to, how do you delay, and what would be your counter to sign or resign?
Well, I think it's impossible for me to give advice to a group of people without looking at each individual circumstance, because that can drive it. If you're a big producer and you call their bluff, they may not fire you. There are certain states, what they're asking folks to do, from my general read of this, is sign what it technically in the law is called a midstream non-compete. They're asking you to sign, existing employees to sign a non-compete, non-solicit. And some states don't allow that. I think Idaho is one, but I haven't looked at Idaho law in 10 years. There's one or two other states that don't allow that you can't say sign this or else, but I can't tell that to anybody without saying, okay, which state are you in? Does that state's law apply? Most of the contracts that we see from investment banks and warehouses say New York law controls, although that isn't always true. Just because the contract says that, if you work in Tennessee, Tennessee law may control. So there are a lot too many variables there to answer that question and tell somebody, well, under the law, you don't have to sign this.
Understood. There's pretty strong language regarding cause language, right? Which is, as you well know, a standard practice for all contracts of firms, but it seems to be in the front page and pretty bold and 11 points about code of conduct. As being a large 250,000 firm, employee firm, what's your experience in them exercising the right for cause?
Well, this is about as broad a termination for cause clause that you'll ever see. I mean, basically, I think, you know, you stole a company pencil, you spit on the sidewalk, that's cause, because it says, you know, standards of professional conduct, employment or performance guidance, or other reasonable performance standards commensurate with the employee's position. So, you know, I view it as I said, in the vernacular, you spit on the sidewalk, we fired you for cause. And so I think if the company wants to fire you for cause and they don't want to pay you the bonus, accelerated bonus, then they're going to have a basis for saying you're not deserving of the bonus acceleration because we fired you for cause. And remember that if you look at cause, another extremely broad component of this broad for cause clause is it says the company or its affiliate in its sole and absolute discretion. So there's some courts that say, if you say, if it didn't have that, then they have to have reasonable discretion. There's some courts that may say sole and absolute discretion is overbroad and it should just be for good cause and you know, and their reasonable discretion. But as worded, this is an extremely broad for cause and gives them, like I said, the ability to fire you for just about anything. And then they say, sorry, since you were fired for cause, we're not going to accelerate your retention bonus.
Understood. A lot of advisors at First Republic have been concerned about the lack of transparency and information flow. They only received this employment document about approximately a week ago, and were given, you know, 10 days to sign. And that's the only document that has actually been delivered. Some have been delivered a bonus agreement, but unknown when they have to sign. Why do you suspect that the firm has been so not transparent, right, in providing information to First Republic advisors regarding if they signed a deal previously with First Republic, what their new deal would be, what the hurdles will be, what the length of contract would be, the ones who received a retention deal, when they have to sign. It just seems to be a lot of concerns among advisors. And is there any speculation of what the end game of JP Morgan is here?
Well, I think the end game for JP Morgan is to get as many people to sign this new deal as they can. And if that wipes out prior obligations that First Republic or somebody else had that JP took on, then they feel good because now it's just down to this contract. Why that is, you ask, speculating, could just be typical bureaucratic slow movement, could be bureaucratic incompetence. Or I wrote an article just last week on persuasion skills about urgency and scarcity. So in other words, you only got 10 days to decide. So you don't have time to go look and see if you can get another job. It's difficult to get a hold of a lawyer and get a full-fledged opinion in 10 days and understand what your rights are or what your rights are not. And so it causes people concern, you know, you got to sign this or else. So there's a limited time that you have to decide, kind of like you see people limited time only. This offer ends next day. You have to accept today or else. All of those are persuasion techniques where you say, I've got to do this or else, and you're worried that the opportunity may evaporate on you. And so that may just be a pressure technique.
Understood. What's your experience, Raghi, regarding their future valuation, right? With these non-solicitation clauses and restrictive covenants, right now there's a very high valuation for First Republic advisors. They're free agents. They can sign contracts to competitive firms, but they're at NewCo, JP Morgan, the next 3 years, and they want to exit because they're unhappy. What happens to their valuation in these restrictive kind of agreements?
Well, if you're saying their valuation, if you're talking about their AUM and the portability of their AUM. Obviously, a non-compete or non-solicit makes a book of business less valuable because NewCo may say, well, HoldCo may seek a TRO, litigation may ensue at FINRA ARBs, and so you're less marketable. And part of that depends on whether or not the assets are what we call sticky assets. So if your portfolio of AUM is proprietary products or other products that have borrowing against them that make it more difficult to move, then that can affect the value. And if on top of that, you've got someone threatening to sue for a non-compete, then that can make that asset more sticky. And NewCo might be more concerned that you won't be able to bring over, 90% of your book.
Understood. Within the next few minutes, Raghi, that you have to finalize on, I appreciate the opportunity to speak. What would you recommend advisors to do?
Well, I think what you have to do is look at your prior contract. You have to see if they'll extend the deadline, and hopefully that buys you some time to get some legal advice as to whether or not you're at risk. And one of the issues is whether or not the non-compete and non-solicit, and actually it's just a non-solicit, are enforceable under your state's law. Looking at the non-solicit of customers in the bonus agreement, I don't think it's enforceable generally under most states. But then you're just saying, well, am I going to be able to afford a legal battle? And even though it looks like the non-solicit as to customers is overly broad and non-enforceable under most states' laws, but there's no guarantee. You may have to spend, hundreds of thousands of attorney's fees to win that battle.
Okay. And in the Credit Suisse cases, they held back $300 million worth of deferred that was earned income from advisors. And do we see potential that JP Morgan may be holding back payments to advisors in this particular situation?
Well, what Credit Suisse did is they quit making payments as of the last day of employment. And then if you didn't make a full year, they didn't vest it pro rata. So basically they lost their last year of vesting. And so that was a big number, and there have been big awards against Credit Suisse, and I've won some of those as well for the wrongful forfeiture deferred comp, saying, look, you shut down on me, and I would have stayed and would have continued to earn the deferred comp as it was vesting. And so that's the argument. But yes, that's a very much easier to win improperly forfeited deferred comp than it is to win a prom note under these circumstances.
Okay. Thank you, Raghi. Really appreciate your time. We look forward to having advisors get in touch with you as needed.
Roger, I appreciate you. As always, you're on top of these issues, and it's important for people to understand what they're getting into, look before they leap and sign a contract that may contain draconian provisions that are going to hurt them down the line if they say, I'm not happy at JPMS and not what I was sold and I got to go somewhere else. And now you've got additional shackles on you, if you will, to the portability of your business.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate the opportunity to speak.
Thank you.